Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Yeah, you play that Boeheim Open today. You play that Boeheim Open today, 17 years ago tonight.
Hakeem well, he Warwick got there the once.
Mellow.
If you coach 60 or 70 years, you'll get there once.
Doesn't matter. Northwestern has gotten the tournament once. The tournament once.
Sure.
Oh, okay. This is my day. 17 years ago, a very odd anniversary, I know, but I take my victories where I can get them.
That's what, well, you got to find your wins. In these hard times, that's what I say every day, and I've been saying it long before the damn pandemic. You go through your day, and you count your blessings. You're above dirt. You're having a glass of your favorite. You get to see your family, curse them out, whatever the case may be, whether you're tired of looking at him already. You're still having the opportunity to do so. So make it great.
So when I got up to get dressed today and I put on, I got my Syracuse shirt on, my Syracuse sweats, and Zoe says, Dad, why are you all Syracuse today? I go, this is the anniversary, the biggest day in Syracuse sports history. 17 years ago today, we won the national championship in basketball. She goes, wow, who did they beat? I said, Kansas. And she goes, whoa, that's a really big state. I said, yes, it is, a very big state, very good at basketball. She goes, who was the best player? I said, Carmelo Anthony. And she said, who? I'm like, yeah, so it's been a while.
You really have not been selling Carmelo as a hero?
Well, this
you've
just
had 11
you...
years, man.
No, no, no.
Come on. But, you should have been reading Carmelo baby books.
Dude, but this shows you what the years 2008 through 2020 have been for Melo. I mean, come on. I got 12 years, and that's I got to go all the way back to 03. I mean, come on. I mean, you realize, oh, boy, Melo. Yeah, Melo's been – I haven't mentioned Melo a lot in the house. Okay. All right, then.
So but he's been in the news a lot the last few days, let me tell you.
Yeah, but I'm not bringing up hey, you know, Melo's in the news again. You're like, Dad, what is that? Nah, you know, it's just, you know, look, Mel, just realize it's been a while for Melo. He had a nice renaissance the end of this year in the NBA. It was kind of fun, but really his glory day was 2003. Unranked to national champions.
Yeah, but that's your guy.
Yeah,
just like Boeheim is your monster.
Well, no,
Carmelo
she knows
is
Boeheim.
Your guy because without him, you don't win that title. Whatever they paid him, it was worth it.
No. Well, she knows Boeheim, and her favorite Syracuse player of all time is Rakeem Christmas because his last name is Christmas. So
that's why she likes him, of course.
Yeah, and she liked Jeremy Grant because she had a boy named Grant in her class that she was friends with. So those were her favorite Syracuse players. It's different when you're under 10 years old. You know, you find your different ways to like who you like.
No, well, I mean, look, people do that all throughout their lives. Doesn't have to have any rhyme or reason to it. We would have just celebrated another NCAA champion. A lot of people would have won bracket pools that had never heard of a single player or perhaps even the team themselves. So
I know.
There's a lot that goes with that.
Elijah Hughes would have led Syracuse on the run after they win the ACC tournament.
Come on now.
They beat Dayton and Obi Toppin in the national championship game, and I can crank call Dan Patrick every single day of my life for the rest of my life, get even over that Dayton win from a few years ago. Oh, you know, no, that would have been tonight.
A number of friends have been telling me they've been having some really weird dreams, right? Because their days are feeling a little longer. They're not quite as full in the hustle and the bustle. And that's been leading to some really surreal dreams. You dreaming of some final scenario where Syracuse was getting there this year? Man, that takes the cake. And I've heard some doozies.
Yeah, well, listen, you want to talk about dreams? Because I knew today was today. I actually had a dream last night that I was in Syracuse, and I was on the street somewhere. I was on campus, and Boeheim comes up to me, and he starts talking to me about basketball. He says, hey, come on, let's go for a run. I have, you know, some guys from the team are gonna meet us and run. And so I'm like, okay, so we start jogging, which I know it's a dream because I am never going to go for a jog. I mean, come on. That's like the worst.
I believe it's pronounced jogging.
Why would I go for a jog? That's like dumb. So we're jogging together, and then like other people from the team – you know, from the 2003 team are running. I'm kind of trying to see them out of the corner of my eye, and we're running all the way to the Carrier Dome, and it's this really exciting time, and I know it's just this amalgam of, I knew the anniversary is today, we'd watched all the Rocky movies, we streamed all the Rocky movies, even the Creed movies, and they're running in the streets together. There was nobody on the motorcycles like in Creed, though, but and then I woke up, and I was tired. And I'm trying to catch my breath. I'm like, why am I? Oh, because in my dream, I was jogging for a long time. So it's like I got a workout as well. I had a dream about Boeheim, and I got in a workout. It was a great night.
Well, if you could actually prove that your legs were moving the whole time and maybe you burned a calorie or two, that would have been great. Mental gymnastics only gets you so far.
So tonight will be a big night as we look back. 17 years ago tonight, the Syracuse Orange on top of the college basketball world. But it is. And, you know, listen, it should be a night where all we talk about is people and sports and teams who are orange.
Do we have – well, I mean, Mike Gundy's in the news.
We're going to start with Mike Gundy.
Yeah,
well,
so,
after
I mean, we got him. Obviously.
We got Mike Gundy.
We got the Buccaneers.
This is – look, find your wins. In days of self-isolation and living, you know, as you look out your window and find your wins during the day – Mike Gundy clearly provided us today with a highlight that just makes you scratch your head and go, boy, this guy, he gets paid more money than I'll ever see in my life.
Yeah.
Because as we, you know, listen, I get everybody today spent most of their day thinking about Syracuse winning the national championship. I get
that. Of course they do.
I understand that. But Mike Gundy, head coach of Oklahoma State, decided to talk, which was a bad idea for him. And, you know, Mike Gundy, who the last thing he said of any real consequence was, I'm a man. I'm 40. I mean, that's the last time we really talked about Mike Gundy.
That's a decade ago
already, too. I mean, that's 10 years. Every 10 years he does something. He wanted everybody to know that he really thought that the college football scene needed to take care of the coronavirus epidemic. And he said, I want my players back. We are planning to come back, not in June, not in July. No. We are coming back in less than a month, and we're going to get people on the field because I think we can. Let's take a listen.
We have to have a plan, and the plan right now is for that to start on May 1st. It might get backed up 2 weeks. I don't know. I can't make that call. I'm thinking in 3 or 4 weeks we could have the test ready available for people that aren't sick based on can we test the employees, the 100 people that work in our building, and we can swab them and clear them to come into the building and get back to work. Once we've done that, I'm looking to start testing the players and bring them back.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Well, I'd rather you go with that today, Mike Gundy. So he wants to push to start having workouts again May 1st. Okay, not June 1st, May 1st, all right, which would be in about 2.5 weeks. This is what he is looking for. He wants to go back and start having workouts then. After this came out, and he said what he said today, Oklahoma State put out a big apology saying we are going to continue to conform to what the experts recommend in the United States and continuing to practice social distancing. Basically, hey, don't listen to anything our head coach said. Because, look, on the surface, I understand Mike Gundy is antsy because he's probably feeling fine. The players are feeling fine. There's been no positive coronavirus tests in college football. And, look, I'm hoping that social distancing is doing a great thing. I understand. But now he is ready. And the fact that he said, the fact that young people who are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, this is the big money part of the soundbite. When he says, young people seem to recover from this fast. So why can't we start practices again in the early part of May? Now, the first thing I want to say is if I'm a parent and I hear this, I go, boy, do I really want to trust my kid's well-being to Mike Gundy? Because everybody in the world is, we're all going by day to day here. The coronavirus, you know, we got a little bit of good news today that maybe the infection, the death toll is not going to be as high as it has been. Maybe. But everything changes hour to hour, so it's hard to say that. But the fact that he's ready to get back in and practice on May 1st, seeing the world the way it is today, I'm like, dude, do you really understand what you're saying? I think you need to spend 5 minutes and look at the news and just get where we all are. You know, just so we all get on the same page. I don't mean some people I don't think should watch the news because if you watch the news, if you're someone who gets depressed about things, so look, the news is very tough. And I don't just mean coronavirus. I mean, when you watch local news, it's depressing. All right? That's why local news is not a lot of fun to watch. But some people, I think, need to watch the news at least for 5 minutes, and Mike Gundy is one of those guys. So he kind of gets everything going on in the United States when it comes to just how we're dealing with the coronavirus this time. But maybe that's just me, Mike Harmon. I don't know.
Well, I think, look, I like the idea of schedules and putting together what you would in terms of a framework and a plan of attack for your institution, your conferences, whatever the case may be. But to be dismissive in parts of it, yeah, you referenced another part of the quote there saying maybe, you know, some that have a type of underlying condition, whatever, don't come back. So here's the quote. Maybe they don't come back, but the majority of the people in the building who are healthy, certainly the 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are healthy, the so-called medical people, see, as soon as you throw that, you've just torched any other coherent, acceptable part of an argument you may have been trying to make, the so-called medical people. Because now you're starting to say, well, everybody's a quack, and I know better because I'm a college football coach.
Yeah.
And you just sound like an ass. Okay, I mean, the I'm a man, I'm 40, that was ridiculous and over the top, but it was good, and it was just being angry of saying, hey, come after me instead of going after a player or his family. Fine. That was fine. This is just stupid, okay? And I'll be the guy to call it what it is because I probably read it 15 times, played it back a few times, and just tried to figure out, all right, how do you absolve him? What's he really trying to say? Is it a good message overall? And I'll take the part of it of the structure and trying to at least have a plan of attack. When a medical board, someone certified to allow you to do so, says it's time to start moving in that direction, okay, that's fine. That's theoretical. That's off the – but then to add these other parts of, hey, these so-called experts – so what you're saying is, well, they don't know, so screw it. We might as well have our own plan and go back to work. That's really what I read in all of this.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of all of stories like this is when people who do something for a living, but they do it very publicly, think, well, I can be an expert on all of these things. And then quickly they show that they are not an expert on things. Like, am I going to come out here? Look, we have a big radio show. It's been around for a while. We're on 400-plus affiliates. You know, we'll talk sports. We'll get outside of sports and things that we can talk about in our wheelhouse. And sometimes we just have conversations about things. Sometimes things are just important to talk about because it's what everybody is going through, and not everybody is an expert. I'm not going to try to tell you I'm a coronavirus expert, but I listen to the experts. Suddenly I'm thinking of that Waiting for Guffman line. I'm not the class clown, but I sat next to the class clown. I studied him. You know, but sometimes it's just important to have a conversation because you want to hear people say things that you're thinking about. But it's when people decide I'm an authority on absolutely everything, and now I'm going to tell you about it because my training as a college football coach tells me, don't listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci. Don't listen to all these experts. No, no, no. Don't listen to Dr. Sanjay Gupta. No, 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 no. Listen to me because, hey, these so-called, they're all wrong because the 15 or 20 people in my immediate circle that think we should be playing football are the ones to really listen to. And yeah, you know, I hear that and I go, oh my God, dude, you're in charge of a bunch of, you are impressionable young men that you are in charge of. And you're sitting here saying, yeah, they can recover fast from this. And I don't think it's that serious. I don't want you coaching my kid if you're going to throw him back in because you think it's okay. You don't know anything about this disease. You know nothing about it. If you want to say, hey, I think we can look at it because potentially we could get good news. What is that about? But when you go on that now, that just tells me, okay, you're one of those people that thinks the whole coronavirus is a hoax and it's not as big as it is and all these other things. You can lead all these other conspiracy theories. And I go, Mike Gundy, what are you doing, man? Just if you want to have that conversation, there's a way to have it without wanting to look like I'm an expert when you're really not and you know absolutely nothing because clearly he knows nothing about this.
Well, I think the big comparison would be the way Pete Carroll has spoken about it is we're going to have our plan in place and be ready to run as soon as we're given a green light. Done.
Yeah.
Clap your hands, Vegas blackjack dealer. That's it. Right. Not putting a date on it, not saying here's the plan, and certainly not trying to do what many players have done. We've heard radio hosts do it. We understand the vast economic ramifications of this from state to state, all these small college towns, all of it. Nobody is turning a blind eye to any of it. Because if you haven't seen the economic data, then you've really just put your head in the sand. on this. And to some degree, it's scary. I understand. It's kind of like putting your head behind the pillow in a horror movie when you know something bad's about to happen because the music is foreshadowing it. Yeah, that's what you do. Or you put your... You know, put your arm up in front of your eyes, whatever it is.
Oh, these two teenagers are having sex. It's not going to end good for them. This is going to end badly.
Exactly. You know, when we were having our Friday the 13th marathon, I mean, we just had to keep, you know, saying, up, cover the eyes. This is going to get ugly and grisly here fast.
Earmuffs, pal. Earmuffs.
Yeah, no, earmuffs. Yeah, hey, look, don't celebrate it. Don't celebrate it. But the idea of anybody in this country not recognizing what's going on financially is just a joke. So trying to do that, you know, and throw that in as well, you know, we've got to get business moving. It's like, we all know that. Mm-hmm. We all know that from the Fed to the state.
He's the one
to
that has to, but people are waiting for Mike Gundy to say it, right? Like anybody, the president, whatever, anybody else, business leaders, economic leaders, Jeff Bezos. No, Mike Gundy needs to say this. Mike Gundy. Right, you know, we got to get the economy going. Oh, I never thought of that. Boy, I'm glad we have Mike Gundy. Oh, that's awesome. Thank goodness he said it.
Well, we've had all the folks from the NCAA, all the different conference leaders say, yeah, it's a bloodbath because if you don't have the football revenue, and we get that. Like, again, nobody's turned away from this. It's not a surprise sneaking up on anybody. Mm. The way this expanded to this level, yeah, you could say, all right, you knew it was going to get bad. You couldn't have expected this, I don't think, to this level, no matter who you were. No matter how far ahead of this you were, that we've gotten to this level. But you know what? We take it day to day. We try to find the wins where we can. And if you're smart and you take all that information into account, yes, we can get a plan in place and have that timeline. Just don't be irrational and just dismissive of the people that have actually been trained to fight these things because you've been successful as a football coach. I mean, Twitter, that doesn't make you qualified. You didn't sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night, okay?
Everybody, I think I can be an expert on absolutely anything and everything. Like you know, I always think back to that one of my favorite lines from 30 Rock when I think of a story like this, Mike Gundy. Like, they put Tracy Morgan on a show to get him more popularity for the show that he's on. You know, it's like a Saturday Night Live show. And they ask him a question, like something was crazy. It was like, you know, the trade deficit with Japan or something crazy. And he goes, I'm glad you asked me that question. I don't know anything about this, but I have some strong opinions. And he just, that's what I think about when I think of Mike Gundy.
I like that. You know what? We should get Tracy Morgan in for the final hour of the show.
Oh, yeah. After what he said the last couple of days. Yeah, Tracy Morgan, final hour of the show for Tracy Morgan.
He had some fun. Final slide hour. Over. For Baby Hour content right there.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
MLB Network, Fox Sports 1 insider extraordinaire John Paul Morosi. JP, welcome, and I know we have a lot to get to, and I really have a tough time believing that the players are going to go for being in quarantine and wanting to go to Arizona and do nothing but play baseball and go back to the hotel when things really might not be safe for the rest of the country. I get that baseball wants to do this, and we talked about this last night on the show when this story broke, and then Chris Sale, some other players have said it today that, yeah, we don't know, we want to be away from our families. And I think when it comes down to it, JP, baseball and the NBA can have all these crazy ideas for bubble cities and we're going to play here and quarantine the players. And I think when it really comes down to it, the players are going to say, yeah, I don't know that we're up for that, and I think we're going to wait a little while.
Well, Jason, Mike, good evening. It is certainly a great question, a great topic of discussion, and I'll begin by saying this, that we are here speaking on the evening of the 7th of April, and this plan, if it is put into play, won't really begin until sometime next month at the very earliest, and we are still, as we speak, less than 1 month away from the night when Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID-19 and the league shut down and the world turned upside down. So if you went back 1 month ago today, we still had the NBA, we still had the NHL, schools were still open, the world was very different. I begin by saying that because I want to emphasize that the world could be very different still a month from now. And we don't really know what that means yet. It could be a little bit better, could be a little bit worse. We simply don't know. And I think I'll make the point that you want right now MLB and the MLBPA to be creative, to work on possibilities. And according to reports, there was a conversation this week about this idea. We'll call it the Arizona proposal, and they're going to continue talking about it. And you know what, guys, from that standpoint, I'm totally fine with that happening because we don't have games to play right now or watch, and I think what we can do is think about what that transitional period could look like for American society and American sports. And if we're being thoughtful about it and we're considering all the different ramifications, I personally have no problem with the powers that be here on both sides of the equation thinking creatively and coming up with a proposal and then seeing if at some point in time, maybe in a month, maybe in 2 months, maybe in three, it's actionable under the circumstances of our country as they exist at that point in time.
Yeah, I think, JP, when you get down to it, I like the test balloon. It's always difficult to put dates on it, right? As you well know, and I mean, your wife, our thoughts with your family and all the good on World Health Day for what she's doing and keeping folks safe and educating the masses. It's just, you know, Mike Gundy, we were talking about him, the same thing. All right, we wanted to look at May 1st and trying to put some hard dates on it. We've watched those slide time and again, and hope's a good thing, but it can also be a dangerous thing because, right, the more you dangle that carrot in front and have to pull it away, you potentially lose folks that way too.
Well, that's a very good point, Mike. And I think that the questions that you know, and Jason raised as well, just the issue of how ready are players to do that? How ready are they to enter the bubble for an undetermined length of time? I think it becomes a lot more plausible if we have an understanding of what the off-ramp looks like and mm-hmm. and if after 2 months there's a greater review process that says, all right, is it safer to go back and play in a particular market or potentially at some point in time have fans? We just don't know. And I was reading a story just today in the New York Times about the fact that Wuhan, 10 weeks after the lockdown began there, just has begun to open up today, effectively. Mm-hmm. So, and life is now just beginning again. Business is there, just reopening. And obviously, that's one data point in what is now a globe of data points. And I think we don't quite know what it's going to look like, other than to say we have to realize that in whatever form baseball is played this year, if it is played, it is going to look and feel very different. I saw in Jeff Passan's report the notion that because there are no fans in the stands, we may see the players sitting in there themselves and taking advantage of the extra space to do physical distancing. It, on some level, it's a jarring notion, but it's a very real one. We're going to have to change our routines for a period of time. Shaking hands, potentially wearing masks, as now is being advocated by the CDC. We're going to look a little different for a while as a society, and that's okay as we all try to find ways to get forward and get through this. I think if we all expect and say, all right, for our baseball, our beloved sports to come back, it's going to have to look and sound and feel the same way that it always has. I just don't think it's realistic to expect those things at this point in time until we have a vaccine, which I think by all accounts is not likely to happen anytime in 2020. So I think we have to consider what concessions are we willing to make. And ultimately, Jason, you hit on the key point. What do the players say? How many players are okay with doing this? How many players are okay with leaving their families for 4+ months and entering this effective quarantine bubble to play this season on TV effectively and not really have any fans there, at least for the foreseeable future? It's a great question, and I think that we'll start to know the answers as things move forward and as more information comes in, but it's, from where I sit, it's too early to say, yes, it's a great idea, and it's also too early to say, no, we can't do it because we simply don't really know what the appetite is for the players, and we don't have enough information yet.
You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That is at John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports 1 Insider, JP. As always, great stuff with you, my friend. Our thoughts to your family, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a great one.
Sounds great, guys. You as well, and we'll have to see how things go. It's kind of day by day, my friends, and I promise
right.
you, Jason, I will bring the Mets jokes whenever we're back on the field.
Boy.
I'll have plenty of Mets jokes for you, okay?
Thank you, JP. I appreciate it, my friend.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
This story, Mike Harmon, I'm kind of shocked to hear that people are actually upset about this, and I don't mean the fact that we're celebrating the 17th anniversary of Syracuse's national championship tonight. Everybody is happy about that. I mean, every
single person. Well, it's the 17th anniversary, so it's a little bit odd.
It isn't odd, but like you always say, we got to find our wins. You know,
that's it. I mean,
hey, we don't have live sports right now.
And for all those Syracuse alums and media, this is heaven, man. This is nirvana. This is climbing that mountain, reaching the top, and then looking out and letting out your primal scream. This is it.
I was trying to find a good Nirvana song to do a Boomer impression for, and I couldn't find one in that amount of time. It's because my head is all Syracuse. That's kind of why it is. You know, it's the way it goes sometimes.
Horrible.
But there's a story out of the NFL that I really have a tough time believing why NFL teams are upset. So according to reports today, remember yesterday we found out that the NFL draft is going to go on from the 23rd to the 25th for now, and everybody's going to do it from their own homes. You're going to have GMs in their own home. You're going to have personnel people in their own home, and this is how we're going to do the draft. Mm-hmm. However, there is a contingent of NFL teams, this according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, who feel that the Cowboys have an unfair advantage because Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones can be in the same home during the draft.
And then there's a contingent on the other side going, sure, have at it.
I mean, really, I get that you think, okay, the Cowboys can have people. First of all, you can have people near each other if you want to. You just have people texting on their phones. But you're really upset that Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones are going to be in the same home together? Don't you want Jerry Jones? I mean, Stephen Jones is going to be doing the draft. You want Jerry Jones involved because he's the guy that could say, listen, I want to take all the guys that I had in the queue, right? Because I'm in this fantasy draft here, and I see all the players, right? Like, I see everybody. I see the Judy kid, the CD Lamb fella, Ruggs. Why can't we take, because I could take all of them and put them in my queue. So let's just draft all of them. Steven, why can't we just put them right in there and say, draft them, and then I get them? I mean, you want Jerry Jones involved. He's the one. What they had to, I think they had to actually knock Jerry Jones out with sodium pentothal when Johnny Manziel was in the draft so they could make sure that the Cowboys weren't going to, because you know he was going to draft them. So you want Jerry Jones involved on this. How is that going to be an unfair advantage? It's like, oh, I have a guy that is going to draft for the best of the Dallas Cowboys, or I have a guy who's going to say, hey, let's do this. Oh, wait, Steven, my screen is frozen. Can you get it? Because I had Zeke. I actually hired Zeke because I'm paying him a lot of money to do the typing on my computer. But he went to the bathroom, and now my screen is frozen. So I don't know how to. Can you come and get me off so I can see what's happening? I think I'm on a Word document somewhere, and I lost my access to the internet. So help me out with that. I mean, really, it's not like Bill Belichick, you know, and Josh McDaniels are going to be together, or you know, really a powerful duo that is a real disadvantage. It's going to be Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones.
But even if what's the difference? You have telephones, right? You have video messaging, unless they're going to require one of these teams. It's the old WWE rules handicap match. You've got to do it from an outhouse and figure it out. No, that's not the way it works. Everybody gets a phone. Everybody's got technology and stuff. Thank you, Rick Wilde. What's the advantage to have them in the same rooms? Even if it was Belichick and McDaniels and they were held up in a room somewhere, they're probably more likely to start throttling each other at some point too.
Roger, we got to pause the draft because Steven has about 17 missed calls from me, and I got 11 texts in the last 4 minutes that haven't been returned. So I got to make sure that he knows what page we're on here. So hit pause on the draft machine, and then we'll get back in a couple minutes, give people a chance to go to the bathroom or make a sandwich. Make sure you make a Cowboy sandwich or drink Pepsi, because that's the official drink of the Dallas Cowboys. So if we could do that, that'd be great. I mean, really, I mean, I don't understand why people are so upset about this. I really don't. I mean,
no, this is the we're going to fight about all the details.
Stephen Jones is probably the guy at the most going, yeah, I don't like it either.
I want my dad out. Yeah, I don't want him near it. Because especially if they decide to do it online, like we joked about it, and maybe it does come to fruition that it has some elements of the fantasy draft. Just think about Jerry. Stephen, can I click the button?
I want to.
And then he goes
draft
rogue
button.
And picks a random guy.
oh, wait, that was a kicker. Oh boy, I took a kicker there. Didn't me? Should I put? It's a button that says rant shuffle. Do I push a shuffle button? Oh man, what does that do? What number does that do? Is it say pass? What does that mean? It means we get a guy that can pass the football or catch passes, right? I'm gonna hit pass. I'm gonna push it. I just want to push the buttons. All right, you just let me know when I can push a button, and I'll push that button. All right, and I can upload Jerry Bucks and make sure we can. I just pay that player right away? Like, we get him, and I can just give him the first installment of his rookie contract. I get a direct deposit number for him. I could just put it right in there, and this will work out great. And suddenly we don't have to worry about it because, you know, all the draft money, it's all slotted. Now it's been that way for about a month and a half. So this might be the best thing we've ever seen. I like this one. This is a great idea. Which button do I hit? Which button?
Well, I think one of the best tweets I saw related to all of these fears, right, is Andrew Brandt, business columns agent, general manager. I mean, he's done a lot of – worn a lot of hats, front office guy primarily. And he just like, okay, these guys are at the helm of multi-billion dollar franchises. You don't think there's one guy in the building that will keep their connectivity? And be able to get their picks in. Like, we could talk all we want about the logistics of everything else, of, you know, whatever the network feed is and how it's televised and pushed forth to us. There's some complications there, but we're seeing people figure it out. It also goes back to, isn't Microsoft a big league partner, right? I mean, I think they could probably figure this out, right? They got some smart people in the room. I think they can make this happen for one of their multi-billion dollar clients. I mean, this could be a fairly simple thing, but everybody's focused on it, and some good laughs, but some real, hey, what if they hack into our tech, you know, our talk and our phones and everything else? Like, oh boy. Now we're getting into that next level stuff. It's like, if you want to push it off, just say you want to push it off. But to claim, hey, you know what, Belichick and those guys might hack our phones. I think now we're getting into a whole other world of paranoia and just stupidity.
So, Steven, take it easy. I'm actually talking to Jerry Jeudy. He wants to play on the team right here. I'm talking to him. He got into the system. I'm talking to him. What do you mean? Oh, his ID is SDX1245783 on Twitter. So it says his name is Jerry Jeudy. It says it right there. So I'm going to keep it. Hey, what's this Paggy Up button on the computer? It's right above the Paggy Down one. What's a Paggy Up mean? It's a Paggy Up. What's Paggy Up? What's Paggy Down? Oh, page up. Got it. What does that mean? Does that mean I open a book and I turn the page up or I turn the page down? Is that like a signal to be able, what is that? Just come over and just tell me which ones I could press. You know what? Here's what I want you to do. Get some nail polish, some ultra bright nail polish, and you just put it on the keys I'm allowed to press. And then you tell me when I can press them. And that's how we're going to make our draft selections. That's how it's going to work. This would be great for us. Now, there's a bigger thing that you alluded to. I mean, besides the comedy of Jerry Jones, Jason Smith, Mike Harmon, live from the Geico Studios, is that already here we are now on April 14th, right? And April 7th.
Here we are on April 7th. You already kicked Carmelo Day to the curb. What are you doing?
April 7th. April 7th is the day. Congratulations, Melo, and great block of teamwork. So we still have another 2 weeks and 2 days till the draft. And since Roger Goodell has come up with his, we're having the draft no matter what, there have been things that have come up that right now are just minor annoyances, But do you really think things aren't going to come up as we get closer to the draft that's going to make it really hard to have it? Look, I'll say right now the odds the draft still goes off on Thursday the 23rd are about 30%, right? We talked to Jason Lockenfora last night on the show, CBS NFL Insider, and he said, what if a GM or a head coach gets coronavirus? I mean, we've had one case, Sean Payton, he's recovered, thankfully. Hopefully we don't have any more of that. But what happens if that does happen? Are we still going to have a draft when a GM is dealing with coronavirus or a head coach is dealing with coronavirus? Are we still going to have the draft? I mean, and look at this issue, you know, with Jerry Jones thing. Now, it seems like it would be a minor issue, but this is just an issue today. You know, it's every day there is something, and it's going to get really hard to do, especially we don't know what the world is going to be like for the next 2 weeks and 2 days. So I'm going to say right now, it's probably 30% we actually have the draft because there's still so much time to go through it before you really get to a point where, all right, well, so many things are happening. I don't know that we can do it. I don't know that we can for reasons A, B, C, D, or E. There's a lot of unknown, and some of the unknown things, potentially we know what they could be, but just the fact that every day is new, and every day there seems to be something that comes up that NFL personnel and GMs are having put out there that are issues without getting to talk about them themselves, because, you know, Goodell has the gag order on everybody. Look, the media is still talking about them. We're still seeing these issues. I mean, I don't know, man. In 2 weeks and 2 days, are they going to be able to iron out all the potential issues and we're going to be able to have the draft? I mean, I like I said, I think it's about 30% we have the draft.
Well, barring somebody getting sick or a number of people getting sick, and you know, our good thoughts to everybody working hard to try to combat this, whether you're doing it at home or whether you're a medical professional or someone on the business line. A buddy of mine, he took his 3D printer. He does generally photography and cool setups for podcasting and other things. He took his 3D machine, figured out how to make face shields, and started deploying those. So, you know, guys like that taking care of business and getting it done there at the Manhattan Beach Studios and just trying to do good things all about. We don't know, but it's still on there. I mean, the rest of it, the technology and everything else could be worked out. Like, I don't see where there's truly anything that should stop it in that way from where I sit. Like, all of those things should be able to be handled and technological concerns addressed to make this thing flow fairly seamlessly. Again, on the television presentation side, that's a whole other thing. But I'm talking from the league getting what it needs in terms of we select this player for this university, cheers to us. That should go through unfettered. But as you say, with 2 weeks, we don't know where the health of the nation is. We don't know if any of the ownership groups, the GMs, all the way down, folks that would be involved and in the room where it happens. And even then, what's critical mass on that? Does it just take one? Like, that's really the question that I guess you have to ask in that process as well. Is it one person in the decision-making process that's enough to stall it? I would guess so. But again, you haven't laid those things out. As of now, it is this will happen on this date. I don't know that I go as far as 30%, but they've got that hard date in mind right now, and they will try to work to it as best they can. And I think that's what everybody's trying to do across the country, try to keep business flowing as normally as you can. And so for that, I commend them trying to it. And we'll see if they're able to pull it off when it comes down to the 23rd. And our hope is that some of the data and some of the trends, that those continue and people stay the course and beat this thing back.
You know, I get it, and I get but there's a difference between let's plan and be positive and I will fine you or discipline you if you say you don't think we should have the NFL draft on the 23rd or the 25th. I mean, those are two entirely different things. And, you know, that tells me, okay, hey, how many people really don't want to do the draft this way? How many people are worried it's not going to turn out the way it is? What if when they're trying to test out the draft that it gets hacked into? What if when the draft is going on, it gets hacked into because the NFL, oh, no, everything's going to be fine. No one can hack into the draft. Well, what happens when something like that does happen? Because you know it's going to, because you're trying to pull something off in a short amount of time that normally would need months and months to vet and figure out how you're going to do this. And instead, you're going to try to pull it off in less than a month. I'd love to see it, but in the end, it's the NFL draft, and there's nothing that would be awful about pushing this a month. There's nothing that it wouldn't cost anybody their jobs, wouldn't cost anybody anything. We can push it a month, and the off season just gets a little bit shorter, but that's okay because it's the off season, and it's one of those special years that obviously we're hopefully not going to have again. It doesn't hurt anybody by pushing the draft. It's not like we got to get up on this for the league year. There's no reason why we can't at least say, okay, we plan it, but if we have to, we can always push it. I don't get why that's not a possibility. And that's my whole thing with it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Shockingly enough, three of the biggest baseball movies in history all were released on April 7th. And it's shocking because this is something that, look, yeah, you get movies with the same release date. All right, here's a movie. But these were all baseball movies. They were all classics, and they all got released on April 7th. Bad News Bears in 1976, Major League in 1989, and The Sandlot in 1993. All of these movies were released on April 7th. Bad News Bears, Major League, and The Sandlot. Right, and it's funny because all of these mean something different because they were all, you know, a generation, quote, apart. Like, you know, you had Bad News Bears, then you had 10 years or so later, you had Major League, then you had Sandlot a few years later. And I remember being not old enough to be wistful about The Sandlot because The Sandlot was never really my movie. You know, Sandlot was fun, and, you know, I've watched it with Zoe a couple of times, and I get where people, you know, the next generation after me grew up, oh, The Sandlot was their Bad News Bears, but I was always like, yeah, The Sandlot was okay. I was always way more Bad News Bears in Major League than I was The Sandlot, and it's weird because now you feel like the movies all came out, like, you know, all came out 30 years ago plus now, but I still feel like Sandlot's like the new one. You know, oh, Sandlot just came out, you know, 1993, you know, it's 27 years ago. You know, it just came out, but I still feel like that's the new one, and the other ones are more classics than Sandlot is.
That is the really frightening thing about it, though. 1993, when we're talking about 2003, add 10 to a film that so many people are being introduced to for the first time during this quarantine. Right, as expecting baseball to come. It's like, you know what, here's a great film that you'll remember. It's like, no, Dad, I haven't seen that one. And, like, my girls love it. Like, it's one of their favorites. They had it, somehow they worked it in. One of their teachers was very innovative and figured out how to work The Sandlot into school at one point. So they'd seen it. We'd watched it together again probably about 2 months ago. And it's one that they enjoy, but, you know, I would have thought there was more distance between Major League and The Sandlot. It's 4 years.
Yeah.
It's 4 years. They seem a world apart in terms of how I recall their release, because Major League just stayed with me. And obviously, by that point, irreverent humor and being a smartass was, well, my calling card. So it spoke to me in so many ways. That, and it gave us more Charlie Sheen and Joe Boo. And Joe, yeah, and that's who they're now merchandising the hell out of. But
yeah, that's, well, then he became the Allstate guy, you know, so that's Allstate Stan.
Well, yeah, Pedro Serrano now is, you know, he was the president and all these other things. I mean, just crazy.
You know, just because I've always wanted to say this, you see those Allstate commercials that he's become famous for, right? Now there's the commercial of him watching himself in the Allstate commercial that's been running.
That's pretty funny.
Doesn't it sound like he says, that's Allstate Stan, like he's talking to someone named Stan, and he says, that's Allstate Stan, instead of saying, that's Allstate's stand? Like, he doesn't really say the D. So he's like, I'm just talking to Stan. That's Allstate, Stan. You want to come here and you want to get the best Allstate insurance you can get. I always felt that. Can he just enunciate the D at the end? Instead, it sounds like he's talking to someone named Stan.
Well, that's it, because you could also hear it as Sam, and all of a sudden you got Sam Jackson yelling at him.
But Stan, why are you so mad? I do want you to have Allstate as your insurance. But even though, look, I'll have Sandlot at number three.
Yeah.
I know when you say Bad News Bears in Major League, everybody's going to default to Bad News Bears because Bad News Bears was such a classic. The number of one-liners, I mean, when Matt fell, I mean, I could see it a million times, but whenever I see him just go, Stein, go back to third, you can't score from first base on a ground rule double. I mean, just certain lines like that I can't stop laughing at. But as much as Major League is like, oh, it's Bob Uecker with all those great one-liners and Bob Uecker steals the movie. The movie itself, you had so much fun stuff with Charlie Sheen and Berenger and Wesley Snipes and Randy Quaid and the fans in the stands, and it ends in such a huge, uplifting way with two incredibly exciting moments in the end against the Yankees. And, you know, Pete Vukovich is great as the big first baseman for the Yankees, who is the big villain. And it's a lot closer between Major League and Bad News Bears to what the better movie is than people expect.
Yeah, for me, it always goes back to Major League. I mean, the one-liners, you've got some guys that have been known as basically always in dramas, now dropping one-liners. Mm-hmm. Right? Tom Berenger was always the scary guy in war movies. And all of a sudden, he's dropping one-liners.
He's the catcher? He's like the good guy? He's like the aging catcher?
Right. I mean, even though there were comedic points to L.A. Law, I mean, that's where Corbin Burnson was. I mean, it's just going down the line. So, and to see what all of those guys became in their careers, just absolutely ridiculous. But Major League's one that it's on that list of, what, 8 to 10 movies that if it's on as you're flicking around channels, it stays on.
Yeah.
And you pick it up from wherever it is, waiting for the next big one-liner or disaster.
Well, look, and that's the thing, is that if you're talking about rewatchability, right, which is a big thing for movies, if The Sandlot's on, I go past it, right? If Bad News Bears is on, maybe I stick with it, maybe not. I mean, I might, but maybe I don't. But Major League is on, I'm always going to watch it till the end. You know, I'm going to watch it for Bob Uecker. So from the perspective of rewatchability, Major League has what Bad News Bears doesn't. Even though, you know, Bad News Bears has all the great one-liners and has Matthau, you keep watching Major League because you know eventually Uecker is going to say something that you just remember laughing at and you can't stop.
Bob Uecker, a legend, still with us. I mean, you got, come on, we got to get the season going so I can get some Uecker.
Take over, man. Monty. Fly ball. Caught. I think that's either my favorite Uecker, or actually from part two when he says, I don't know how Parkman concentrates with all these paternity suits hanging over his head. I think those are parking tickets. Ah, it doesn't matter. You know? But it really is.
Broadcasting school
close.
Really paying off for you there, hey, Monty?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really close. But the rewatchability, you know, that part of it goes to Major League. It's that tough. But look, that was also the era, like the late 70s through the mid 90s was really, that was the golden era of baseball movies. You know, that's where you had so many other, because you had Eight Men Out, you had Field of Dreams, you had A League of Their Own. This was the heyday of baseball movies. You know, and you look all those movies from like mid 70s to the mid 90s, that's when, I mean, what baseball movies or what big sports movies are from the mid 90s through now? It's all football or basketball. You have Miracle, which was really big, and that's hockey, but that was a real event. I mean, it's all football, it's all basketball. I mean, those are the movies now. It's like baseball is like, can we make a really great baseball movie again? Haven't we seen all the different great baseball movies? It's hard to redo that. I mean, that was really the golden era of those movies.
Well, just waiting for them to remake The Fan again.
Oh boy. Oh, why do you, we're having such a great conversation, you bring up The Fan.
I enjoy it. It's a guilty pleasure movie.
Come on, the guy, first of all, the guy stabbed.
How much did the guy who
the
wrote
players.
It hate Barry Bonds?
Okay, hey, yes, I know, right? Hang on. All right, so for time out. You want to talk about The Fan. First of all, the guy stabs one of the players to death in a sauna, doesn't get caught, is able to walk out, not get caught, okay? And somehow they don't catch him. Okay. Then somehow he winds up becoming the home plate umpire. I mean, really?
It's Enrico Palazzo.
I mean, it's the guy that sang the national anthem. I mean, how he becomes the home plate umpire?
Exactly.
Who's the guy that they? Everybody knows who the umpires are. Oh, who's this? Oh, it's Robert De Niro is the home plate umpire here at the end of the game. Okay, now I get it. I mean, you're gonna bring up The Fan?
I just thought it would get you into a rant.
He went into Wesley Snipes' house and stole the jerseys that he had and was wearing them. I mean, The Fan? The Fan. You just ruined this whole conversation.
No, I didn't.
Great conversation.
I brought it to the next level because you can hate watch something with just the same passion.
I think I watched The Fan once and that was it. And I go, oh my God, this is terrible. This is terrible. I mean, really. And what was it? Ellen Barkin, right? And somebody else were sports talk radio hosts?
I believe that's right.
In San Francisco, right? They were hosts and they had some kind of role in the movie at the end, right? Like, sports talk radio hosts were trying to figure out what was going on. They were solving
a mystery.
It was
a Tony Scott movie. Ellen Barkin, John Leguizamo, Benicio del Toro.
Oh yeah, he was Juan Primo, the guy that got stabbed because you know he wanted because Robert De Niro wanted Wesley Snipes to take his position. So I'm going to sneak into the sauna, stab him, let him bleed to death, and leave. That's what I'm going to do. There you go. There you go, Bobby Rayburn. I got your position all set for you. Go ahead, Wesley. Go hit now. I mean,
Aaron Neville.
You just ruined the conversation.
Roger Lodge was in it.
No.
Jack
Roger
Black
Lodge
was the technician.
No. Those guys?
Yes.
Oh, wow. They haven't wiped that from their IMDb pages entirely?
Not yet.
It's still in there? Oh, boy. Okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.